roll call to establish a forum.
Here.
Bill Sodders.
Doug Ward.
Linda Johnston.
Steve Hess.
Scott Perkins.
So we have established a forum. Bill, would you lead us in the Pledge of Allegiance, please?
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Has everybody had a chance to review the minutes? Do we want a few minutes to review the minutes?
I've read them. I don't have any problem with them.
I make a motion that we approve the minutes as presented.
I'd second that.
Ed, do you have anything? Any?
No, let's carry on.
Okay, there's been a motion to and a second to approve the monthly meetings from last month's meeting. All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? We've approved them. Public comments. Scott.
I'm the only public today?
Yeah.
He is several things today, as you can see. In fact, up until recently, he was also a Public Works member. Representing Arlo today.
That's no longer?
Well, for whatever reason, I think just envy, Patty stole his nameplate.
Oh, you scared me. I thought, what's happened? And I don't know.
Do you have another one? Do you have the mayor there?
Yes, you want to be mayor?
He'd like to be the mayor as well.
What did you say?
I didn't
follow the gist of that. What was that?
He's no longer a public employee.
You just got to follow along here.
I'm everything today.
He's everything today. And what's the basis for all this? You're going, this seems strange. He figures if he has enough roles, it'll intimidate you. You won't ask him any questions. And he says that doesn't work. He'll stand up.
Yeah, that'll work.
All right.
I don't have any public comment at this time, no.
No, you're supposed to say we don't have any.
We. This is going to be a difficult meeting.
What about, I skipped the status update on Public Works activity. Is that all of this?
That's what all this is, and I thought we'd just kind of wade our way through it.
All right.
Wow.
Would you like me to start the dialogue, Madam Chair?
Certainly.
Okay. I think more than anything, what you see here, this bundle of information, and I, Scott, do you have it?
I don't have a bundle.
Patty, did you make him a bundle?
We have an extra one right here.
Yeah.
Well, there's an extra bundle?
Yeah.
Patty, we have one.
Okay.
But do you have enough for all of Scott?
Yes, we'll make one for Roy so we can give Roy one when...
Scott needs four packets.
One for each.
All right.
AKA representing.
That's right. I think more than anything, it's been a busy one, and I think this is just the beginning of what is going to transpire. And I think what this also reflects is that the Public Works Committee, to the extent it wants to be an active, viable interest in our community, is going to have lots of stuff on its plate.
Mm-hmm.
So I just wanted to kind of stroll through it and talk about some of this stuff, and I'm sure that will precipitate some dialogue, and we'll go from there. The very first thing you see is at the last meeting, there was a discussion about our budget, and as part of our budget process, the counselors had identified 17 goals. They put money with these 17 goals. And they did that sort of to give us some focus where and how we should expend our energies when we don't have very much money. We've got a lot of people asking us for a lot of things. And we're just a startup. So we had 17 items that were identified as goals. And then you folks had a copy of these at the last meeting, and someone said, well, hey, you know, a lot of these are public works items. And shouldn't we be in the driver's seat? And how come these things are out as items that have gone to the council, have been, you know, vetted, deliberated, and where were we in that whole process? And I pointed out that all the council did was identify pertinent public works things, and that truly, these things don't have a lot of groundwork with them, and that I would bring them back at the next public works meeting for your review. So the point in doing this is, these are our goals. Several of them are public works goals. You folks are in the driver's seat for public works, as far as I'm concerned, in a lot of different ways. That is, your policymaking board, you can say, you know, even though these are your number one, two, three, or whatever focuses, this is our number one focus. These are the things that are most important to us. And so that's why it's before you. It's not so much that you need to take an action on this.
Right.
But rather, you need to take this home and look at these priorities and say, here's what's important for the community as far as we're concerned from public works. And I think my position, I think the council's position is, whatever your position is within reason, is going to be something that they're going to want to follow suit. All right? So I would have you look this over. And then at the next meeting, we can talk about what you know, first of all, what do each one of these mean, and what are we going to do?
Right.
And does that seem reasonable? And are there any variants associated with it? Or are there other things too? You know, just because we've said these are the priorities of public works, if you've got some other public work priorities, we might as well get them on the plate too, right? So that was the first thing. And then let me move on to the second thing, and that is, we had a solutions meeting here on June 7th, in which representatives of several state agencies were in Lapine. They were here along with representatives from the governor's office. And they do this once a year, and that is to, you know, okay, what are your issues, community, and how can we help out? And so, in advance of the meeting, Gary Farnsworth, who is the one of the ODOT administrators for Region 10, contacted me and says, well, Steve, you know, when we get together with the Solutions Committee, part of it's going to be meet and greet. But part of it is, you know, what's your problems? You know, how can we help you? So Joan and I went out Sunday morning here, two or three Sundays ago, and drove around and just looked at and discussed particularly public works infrastructure issues that were relevant to this community. And then I offered this up to the solutions team, and particularly ODOT, who's going to be looking at these things. But again, I provide this as more information, because all this stuff is within your charge, within your purview, are important things. So really, when you take the list of priorities that the city's identified already, you take a look at these lists, you have a good place to start in terms of, you know, what needs to be attended to, what's the most important thing, you know, here's what we should be working on, okay? And I think that's some direction I'd like to get from you folks is, all things considered, what do you want us to work on, okay? We can't work on a whole lot of things at one time, but collectively, the seven of you are certainly more astute than the one of me and the four of this gentleman next to me. And I would have you think it through, right?
So do you, should we just review this and maybe outline what we think, first of all, is us, pertains to public works, and then kind of list our own little priorities? Or I think maybe just outline what we actually feel under Public Works.
Yeah.
And then just kind of become familiar with them as we go through the process.
Right, and you know, and again, if we need to do some little tours from time to time, you know, go out and take a look at something in the field, there's no reason that we can't go out and take a look at stuff.
Okay.
Or take some pictures and show you what the problem is. But you know, you folks live in this community, you probably have a very good idea already what the problems are relative to all these things that are enumerated here.
So if we are hearing some other things from the community, from the City of Lapine residents, that we could also bring up, you know,
yeah.
Is this a possibility to add this on? Okay.
The goal is to identify the universe of issues out there and then prioritize them, and prioritize them two ways. Prioritize them in terms of what's available to do financially, you know, 1, 2, 3, but also in terms of safety. You know, we really, whether we can afford to do this or not, we need to do this, because if we don't do it, Grandpa's going to get hurt. Okay?
Right.
All right.
Okay.
Then the third thing on our list is this notice of intent, and I just wanted to share this with you.
Mm-hmm.
One of the priorities that was on this year's list was discussion about multi-purpose pathway, about trying to connect north and south Lapine together, to get people off of Highway 97 that are walking or jogging there, to start having some kind of a pathway system through our community so people, we can get them out of their cars, some kind of a focus on healthy community, again, walking, biking, all that sort of stuff. And so the city has constructed and applied for an ODOT grant. This is the first phase of it, and there's a map associated with it. And it shows the starting of about a 3-mile loop system that would tie into the park and ride up there at Burgess, Highway 97, come down through the county lands called New Neighbors, come down to First Street, also run across the top part of Crescent Creek, come down Huntington to Memorial Parkway, or Memorial Lane, whatever it's called, run over to Couch and down to First, and then run around and loop that back together again. Okay.
Perfect.
So, there's a narrative here that kind of expresses why we're doing it.
And this is a great idea, because before we ever had the Public Works, Justin had brought it to our attention at some other meeting I was at, that there were grant funds through some other source up to, like, I don't know if it was $200,000 or what. Would that have been the same thing? But we didn't have it identified. I mean, we didn't have much. It was this time last year. We didn't have enough time to put it all together, is what happened. So this may be the same grant, but what a wonderful thing that would be. Can we discuss this a little bit?
Yeah, and just a couple things on it.
Okay.
If you've got your map out, there's an area that's highlighted in yellow. That's all county property. So in order to be able to do this, we had to go knock on the county door and say county commission, and also Tom Anderson, the community development director, and Nick Lelak, the planning director, and ask all these folks if, A, they thought this pathway system was viable. B, would they be willing to give us a dedicated, permanent, pedestrian
easement.
Recreation easement through their roughly 350 acres, which is a big chunk of this pathway. They agreed to do it. We have a letter from all three county commissioners that accompanies our grant application saying, not only is this a good idea, but we've already thought about this in some form or fashion in previous plans, And so what you folks are doing is you're implementing the plan. And so the goal would be to have a multi-purpose pathway that would be all the area that you see in pink. Get people off the streets. You know, again, we don't have a lot of sidewalks, a lot of people walking shoulders. And we have a nice surface area, probably a 10-foot wide pathway. 6 of it would be bituminous. 4 feet would be gravel, so that you could not only have joggers and walkers and bicyclists, but you could also have equestrian. There's no reason that, you know, this is a horsey community, there's no reason you couldn't have a horse attribute to all of this. And what's neat about it is it ties together the seniors, it ties together all the schools, it ties together the retail, downtown, and it all gives it a place to go, and that is to the transit system up there at the Park and Ride.
Mm-hmm.
So it not only supports sort of a recreation behavior, provides a safety component, but also helps enhance multimodal to include park and ride and transit.
Okay.
So I think competitively it's going to be a good project. We do want to work with the park department on this. I talked yesterday with Tom Anderson, and he thought it would be important as we move forward. We're doing a text amendment right now. We have to do a text amendment to make this pathway compatible with county standards. But Tom Anderson, the community development director, said we ought to get a letter of support from the park department. And he says, moreover, you know, as he viewed it, this was a relationship between the city and the park department, and the community at large, to try and do something collectively, a benefit to all of us.
Are you talking Lapine Park and Rec, or are you talking State Park and Rec?
Lapine Park and Rec, okay. If I could find a representative from that agency to talk to. No. I understand there's sort of an underground organization.
Yeah.
Hard to talk. The other thing we wanted to do with this is we wanted to put some lighting bollards out there, those little 4-foot ones that are tall with the little lighting caps on them that are solar, and have that run along the highway so at night, during the day, the drivers could look over and they could see activity, which would help frame that you're in a community, you know, that, you know, maybe there's a reason for you to stop, because people are social creatures, so stop where they see other people. And then at night, the luminaries would help define that you're not in a city and now you're in a national forest and now you're in a city again.
Right.
But in fact, you're in a city that whole time. So that's some of the thinking behind this, you know, and we get...
Right.
And then there's a whole kind of a lot of different things we could do along the way. At some point, we could start to have little recreation stops. When I was in the Army in Germany, you go in the forest there, they have all these staging areas for recreation activities, you know, the chin-up bars and, you know, the obstacle courses and things like that. We could have that along the pathway.
Well, and we kind of need to keep in mind that there's some other things that they need to do ahead of time, because remember when ODOT last month was talking about clear-cutting some of that to thin it out. So when people are coming from North Lapine into the city, they know they need to start slowing down and paying attention because they're coming into town. So probably coordinate all these things and the steps we need to do to get where we want to go. What do you think, Ed?
I think, you know, these paths, how far off the road?
Well, we want them as close to the road as we could get.
Really?
You know, we want them off of the ODOT property, which I think it's 100 feet deep there, but just on the other side of that, so that you were far enough away that there was a safety element between the pedestrians and roadway and any expansion opportunities of ODOT, and hopefully not, I would hope that they have contraction things, but so that you have that visibility, you know, that I'm in a vehicle and I can look over and I can see this activity center. Because again, people will stop when they see activity, and they won't when they don't. I've got a great story, and that is when I was growing up in Spokane, the city fathers and mothers decided that because Spokane snows almost every day all year round, that it would be nice to have skywalks on the second floors of all the buildings downtown so that you could just go into a parking garage and get off and be on the second floor forever from all the buildings in the downtown area. That was their big vision. And they wanted to have as many skywalks as Minneapolis, who has the most skywalks in America. So they embarked on that, and at some point they got very successful. They had 30 or 40 of these skywalks from building to building to building. You never ever had to go outside. Well, what happened over time was, you know, it used to be that all the activity was at street level. All the businesses downtown were at street level. And now all of a sudden all the business activity is on the second floor, mm-hmm. and it's competing with the first level. Uh-huh. First level can't compete because it doesn't have that amenity of being indoors. So all the buildings on the first floor of downtown Spokane started to close down and board up. And all of a sudden the street activity that had always been downtown went away because it's all on the second floor, it's out of sight, out of mind. And people stopped coming downtown. Even though they were spending more money to entice people to come down, they had forgotten that one of the reasons people come down is they're social creatures, and they'll go where other social creatures are, but if they don't see all other social creatures, they won't go there, because where there's no people, that means there must be something wrong. Okay. And so as you drive through Lapine, if you don't see a lot of activity out on the street, you have no reason as a social creature to stop. So what can we do to tie north and south Lapine together? What can we do to start creating some social activity along the way? And I view this pathway as one of the mechanisms to provide for that social thing.
How long of a stretch is that?
2 miles.
2 miles.
Actually, a little more than 2 miles.
Do you think people will get out and walk that?
Right. Well, you know, we're going to have, that's why you see at midpoint here this transition over to Huntington, because a lot of people are just, they're not going to make it. Either they're going to be up here at the park and ride, they're going to make it down to Crescent Creek and they're going, that's enough.
Yeah.
Or they're going to be down here on First and they're going to make it up to Crescent Creek, that's enough. So that's one of the reasons that we put a pathway over here on the Huntington so they could park and ride at Crescent Creek if they needed to. Because you're right.
So those dotted lines are paths?
The pink line. Here, let me just make sure.
I see the pink one, but you're saying that they wanted like halfway up, there's a cross here?
That's in the future. We've got this cross here. Okay. So here's Crescent Creek. So there's parking area in here. I would think some people would park here, they'd walk up here, or they'd walk down here, or you'd be here, and you'd come out here. But I don't think a lot of people are going to come from here all the way up there. That's okay. Just unless they're on a bicycle.
Okay. Now this is 10 foot wide, yeah. And it's 6 foot of asphalt, Purple. And then 4 foot of gravel?
Yeah, and I'm just suggesting that. The other thing is, I was thinking actually a 10-foot recreation trail in a recreation easement, but asking for 20 feet for a construction easement. Okay? So a 20-foot, and within the 20-foot, do the things that need, you know, for instance, if we're going to have some kind of an obstacle course along the way. You know, you're going to get down and do push-ups wherever those things are, or something.
No, I could see even having, you know, like a muscular dystrophy walkathon around it.
Oh, that'd be wonderful.
That would really create a lot of, you know, people driving through the area if they had those things. You know, that.
And our Relay for Life kickoff could be.
There's tons of them.
Yeah,
you know, and little things like, for instance, I grew up in Spokane. And they have a park there, it's called Finch Arboretum Park. It's just off the downtown area. It's a beautiful park. They have a blind trail in there. And so all the blind people from all over go in there, and they have Braille, and they have it all set up, and they tell you what you're doing and what you're experiencing along this pathway system. And I thought some little thing like that, you know, gives it a distinction, you know, gives it some character.
What's the total distance around the whole perimeter?
It's about 3 miles in its entirety.
That'd be perfect for a walk for various organizations, I really think. And it's something we don't have now. I mean, you can't take a walk out here. I walk by Shih Tzu every day, and I know.
You have to wait for the trucks. What I'd like to see someday, someone donate some land so that we can have a river walk tied to this.
Now, when we talked about that, there's all kinds of attributes. This is sort of like the first leg.
Yes.
A second leg that just really jumps right out at me is something from the elementary school on Burgess over to this trailhead. So the kids have a way.
Well, they're right here.
Yeah, and that's
they're
the point.
In the neighborhood.
They're in the neighborhood, just have a pathway that runs over there. So they're connected up too. And then eventually run it over to Huntington and down. And then we also talked about running it over to the new fairgrounds area that we're going to acquire and run it down to City Hall. And so that we are a system of pathways and trails. And you have a huge constituency out there that's athletic in nature.
Right.
That would like to do more outdoor recreation and all the things that go along with it and all the dollars and cents that can be spent doing it if they had an opportunity to do it.
I want to mention something else that I learned 2 or 3 years ago. The trailhead, walking, hiking trailhead to the caldera and Palina and East Lake is on the east side of here, somewhere over by the industrial park and the business park. There is a trailhead and a designated trail that goes up the mountain. So, I mean, this could be fabulous in entirety.
Yeah. Well, I just know, the only problem I have here is that how close it is to 97.
Yes.
Well, I personally do not want to walk on a highway with semis are going 55.
No, and again, the goal here is to get you off of the highway, parallel to the highway, so that there's a visibility component, but enough distance away, because right now people are bicycling and walking
on
97, and the reason that this is an attractive grant application to ODOT is they've changed their mission. They want to get people off of highways, they want to get them on the streets so that they don't encumber the highway, and they want safe people. We had a person here got killed on the 6th of this month as they were walking across Wiki up at night.
Right.
That's okay. Number two.
And that's number two. And so your uncomfortableness is what we're trying to resolve.
It's just like I personally wouldn't want to walk that close to the highway because it's noisy and it's a lot of wind coming off those trucks. If you can get it, 40 feet away from the highway or 50 feet away.
Well, you've got a 100-foot right-of-way here.
It's going to be outside.
And you're beyond that right-of-way. You're going to be 50, 60 feet away from the highway to begin with.
You're going
to
be more than 100 feet.
More than 100 feet?
Okay. Yes. Okay. You may be 200 feet.
Okay.
From a truck.
Yeah, farther the better.
Oh, yeah.
From a truck or from the center of the highway?
Probably from the edge of the highway, you're going to be at least 100, 150 feet away.
From the fog line?
It's going to be really close to the tree line there.
It's going to be close to the tree line,
okay?
Okay. And the other reason is this is county land that hasn't been developed yet. You need to put it in along their perimeter because they're not going to want you to put this pathway in the middle of where they're going to want all their houses to be.
Right.
So on the one hand, what this does, and this is why I sold it to the county, is I said, look, if you are going to develop this area, which they want to do for residential purposes, what is a great amenity to help sell this land? And that is a multi-purpose pathway that functions and has activity. It's like a school. It's something that people want to buy.
Right.
The more things like the park and ride, the school, all that, you can tie it into, the more points you get on the ODOT grant, the better chance you have of getting that money from ODOT.
All right.
Doug?
And you already have a right-of-way that runs right through where you want to put that.
How is...
There's a sewer right-of-way.
How is this new parkway going to fit into the already county-planned pathways for the entire new neighborhood, even though they're a long ways from being developed? Is that all going to tie together?
Yes. That's why I went over and I talked to Nick and Tom at Deschutes County night before last, is... And we'd had a conversation before. I showed it to him. I said, well, what do you think? I'm getting ready to apply. Does this make sense? Are you going to support this? You're going to be against it. And they said, oh, hell, we've already got a plan that kind of envisions this idea. We didn't have it the way you had it. We had it that development would come in, and that would precipitate a need for a path. But what you're saying is you're going to create a path that will precipitate a need for development. And, you know, other than you are reversing the order, we're fine with it. But the framework of their new neighborhood plan said that as you go to develop, you have to do a master plan. And I said, gee, well, does that mean for our trail system we'd have to do a master plan first? And they go, yeah. And I go, well, we don't want to do that. We just want to build a trail. And they say, okay, well, we'll put some text language in there that says, you know, you have to do a master plan except if you're doing a multi-purpose pathway. So they've constructed some language. They're going to send it over to me, and then we're going to start the process of applying for the text amendment, which ought to take 60 or 90 days. But again, if we're going to do this, I need to get my ducks in a row, because they'll let us know within 30 days whether this is a viable application.
Good.
They have $21 million. They're saying at the onset that they're probably going to support 60% of what comes in the door. Okay? So we want to be part of that 60%. But once you're part of that 60%, then you've got until December to demonstrate the prowess to be able to follow through with all this. So means I got a lot of hustling to do between now and December to have all my ducks in a row, including things like text amendments.
So are you going to be out there plowing the snow on the pathway?
He lives close enough, we'll get him a shovel.
I talked to your doctor, and he told me as part of your physical therapy that you need to get out there and do some snow plowing.
I see.
And I said, well, how much? He said, well, you know, minimum 2 or 3 miles.
Arlo, did you have any other comments on this?
No, I've been talking with Joan on this, so I'm way ahead of the game on this.
Well, do we want to make a consensus? Do you want us to have a little consensus now like to proceed with this?
What I would think would be helpful is when we go to do the text amendment, that we have a letter of support from the Public Works Committee. It says we endorse this concept, we're behind it, we're going to actively work to make it happen. And B, when I go to do something in December, that we have a letter from you as well, if in fact you endorse this. The other thing I want you to think about is, you know, this is just an idea on paper, and it needs to manifest, and it needs to manifest in terms of who are we and what do we really want to do. If we have a pathway opportunity, what are we going to do with it? Because there's 3 miles of it. It's awful long. You know, some people aren't going to walk it 3 miles just because they're going to get bored. You know, so what do we do? How do we make it interesting? How do we make it distinct? Like I was talking about a blind trail. Mm-hmm. There's all kinds of things we could do this pathway.
In Eugene, along the Willamette River from Beltline, which is at the north end of the river, and you go down to Valley River Center, they've got pathways there that actually go clear on over into Springfield, and they put benches along there, they put little interpretive posts, they've done a lot of things. There's a couple areas there that have ducks and geese in there, very frequent, so they interpret that area. There's a lot of things that can be done, there's a lot of potential here. It's just a matter of having the funding to do it and the manpower.
Well, we've got the manpower here.
Well, actually, two of you, because you live in the neighborhood.
Yeah, but my arms aren't working very well.
Now, he's going to tell me his hands don't fit the shovel, and when you turn them over, they still...
We could get him one.
You know that one of the things I did before I left Boise is I asked, I said, if I'm moving over to Lapine, what will I need? And they said, you'll need a snow shovel.
Right.
So I went down to Walmart and bought their last snow shovels. Like, you know, they're going, why would you want to buy a snow shovel, you know? And I'm going, because I'm going to a place where they have it. They didn't have them. They're even available. I bought the last snow shovel at a huge Walmart store.
Oh, we're proud.
Come over here.
Do we have any other discussions, or do we just want to give a consensus now that we're in support of proceeding forward with this, and we will just work on it as it all evolves?
I think so. Yeah.
Yeah. I think so, yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. So we have a consensus to do that.
Thank you. It all works with the park district to get a letter of support as well.
It could be, because I know if I ask for it, I'm going to have to pay a price to ask for it.
We won't go there.
Yes, let's just not go there.
And I'll thank you for all the hard work. This is really, really nice.
Well, it just, it fell into our lap. We were advised that there was a 90-10 match application out there. Meantime, we'd been kicking around this idea of a pathway, and the council got ahead and agreed to $20,000 to initiate this effort. And then voila, this came out, and we're going, wow, if we got $20,000 and 90-10 match, we can go get another $200,000. Mm-hmm. Well, $220,000 is a good chunk of change to get this thing started.
Right.
Plus, we get started, you know, then the enthusiasm builds, we find more match monies, and we make this happen. We tie it into the Parks and Recreation Department. And it's also a win for them, too. It's a win for the city, and it's a win for the Park and Recreation District.
And I'd like to get some citizen involvement, resident involvement, because it'll be their trail.
Well, and so it will help develop the new neighborhood. It'll give that new neighborhood a reason to develop.
Yes.
You know, it'll help bring in every house that goes in there, that's tax base. And tax base then translates into our being able to provide more service delivery.
You bet.
It just makes sense.
It does.
Okay. So, anyway, thank you.
Do you want to make a motion that our committee supports?
That'd be helpful.
Proposal.
That would more solidify it than a consensus.
Probably be best, yes.
Do I hear a motion to support continuing investigation and input and press forward on our new trail system?
I so move.
I second that.
All in favor? Any discussion?
No.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? This motion has been passed.
Did you want to direct that Oral be in charge of snow?
I think it's a two-man party.
I'll tell you what, I'm already in charge of snow in my road district.
There, it all fits in. It's up to you two are in charge.
Well, that's scary. Okay, I think the next thing I'd like to share with you, and in fact I'm going to a meeting this afternoon, is further. There is a real effort here recently to start the process of improving First and Reed and Highway 97.
They were out there this week.
They were out there this week, and in fact they were knocking on my door yesterday. I couldn't meet with them, but they wanted to show me how they were going to reconfigure just right out here.
Yeah, and stuff. I've seen them out here.
And the goal is to get it down to three lanes and to, you know, to start dressing up all this and attenuate the traffic and slow it down and orchestrate it. But anyway, here's a map, and you also receive in here a little two-page letter to go with the map. The letter is from Joel McCarroll, and he's saying, you know, we're going to get out this year. We know we can't do anything at First and Reed for a couple of years, you know, the signalization. It's absolutely no reason we can't go out now and do something. So they're showing us all the things that they plan to do this summer to improve traffic flow and lessen traffic conflict. And one of the cool things is you'll see on your map here, they show the speed limits, the 35 and the 45 mile an hour speed limit. Just north of First Avenue. They're planning to put, little digital traffic devices where that signage is that tells you how fast you're driving.
I've seen those in other places and they're solar powered.
They're solar powered. These will be the first in Central Oregon.
They're probably about so square to give you the
slow down. So yeah. It's cool. We get to be the first at something. And they feel that that will be helpful because you'll be driving along and you'll be doing 47 miles an hour. You'll see the sign that says 35. You'll tune it out and then you'll see your speed at 47 and you'll go, whoa. And that's sort of the concept here.
Be there permanently?
They're permanent. And that's what's cool about them. It's not like the reader boards that the sheriff's office puts out there and drags around from place to place and says, you
or
know.
Or state police.
State police.
These are not temporary.
There's one as you go to Reno, in that little town, you go by the I can't remember the name of that little, Leachfield, down south. Anyway, as you curve in, and there's one permanently by the school, front of the school.
Yeah.
And it has radar on it, too. Well, naturally.
Well, it does.
That slows you down, number one, to the radar you pick up a mile.
That's what tells you the speed you're going.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
So anyway, their goal is to improve stuff here, not just 2 years from now when they've got the money to do the signal light, but to try and incrementally do improvements at this location all along.
Okay? Cool.
And the extent that you folks want to be a participant in that process, I think they're raising their hand and saying, hey, you know, we want your input. The next thing on your list is just a letter that is from, her name is Kathy McConnell, Traffic Investigations Coordinator. Just a letter to the city advising us that they've received our traffic study and our request for a speed zone investigation on Huntington Road, and noting that we have a lot of cars that traverse through there 55, 60 miles an hour. And we have a lot of senior citizens through there. We have a lot of children through there. We have the Crescent Creek neighborhood. We've got all kinds of reasons for our drivers to slow down. Okay. The next thing, and this was sort of a disappointment, and I want you to think about this. One of the goals for this year, it wasn't so much a goal, it was just acknowledgement that the Cagle neighborhood needs all the love and attention that we can get hands on. And we had set aside $15,000 specifically relative to mostly traffic improvement stuff. And I thought, well, one of the things we could do, because we go out and we blade and grade the road a couple times a year, we go out and we do snow blowing there. This year we're going to go out and do some tree removal so as to widen the rights of way. But then we put a dust palliative down, and that would help with the dust issue out there, and it would also strengthen the road a little bit. And it would be something helpful if we couldn't pave the Cagle neighborhood. And noting there's approximately 5 miles worth of roads in that neighborhood. So I went out fat, dumb, and happy, and got some estimates for dust abatement. And I think the first one maybe fall down. It was like $15,000, $17,000. It's $16,000. And then I got an updated one yesterday that was $17,000.
This is piggybacking onto a county dust abatement?
Yeah, I actually went to the...
Because our road district uses dust abatement. Yes. We've got 8 miles of road we deal with.
And I went over to Tim McGinnis and I said, who do I need to talk to get some kind of a good dust? And he gave me these two
names. Right.
So I went to the first one and they came back at $16,000, $17,000. It's more money than we have. I was looking like maybe $5,000. And then, so just as I was starting to recover, then I got another one for $34,000.
Oh.
And I go, you know, we're just not going to be able to do dust abatement over in that neighborhood for all the roads in its entirety. So is there anything we could do over there dust abatement wise? And I'm looking to you fine folks to help me out there. Maybe some kind of matching money that we take some of our $15,000 and if you'll pay 50% of the dust abatement, we'll pay the other half. Or
How many miles in there, Steve?
It's about 5 miles, 5.3 miles, something like that.
I don't know what our road district pays, but it doesn't seem like it's that high for
me. I'd be real interested. Anyway, I'd like to get out and do some dust abatement over there before people choke to death or get taken away by those 20-pound mosquitoes. So anything that you can think of, because we just don't have that kind of money. I may be able to put $5,000 toward dust abatement over there. But if I can only do that, and we're looking at this big ticket, what can I do over there? Is it matching money thing? Is it certain roads have priorities over other roads? How do I do that? And I'm mostly looking at you, Doug, because you know you're over there looking to you for guidance.
Well, remember that everybody that lives, we're talking 7.2 miles total of the cable.
Okay, is it 7.2?
Plus Drafton Road, which is another mile and a half.
Okay.
And those are the total gravel roads within the city limits. But remember, everybody that lives over there, when they bought there, they knew we had a gravel road to begin with. There was never any anticipation that it would get any better. The last 2 years that we've been doing road maintenance, that's a big help. Now, 3 years ago, when I was on the council, we looked into this dust abatement, and it was running over $50,000. One application a year, but that was because they were using petroleum based. Now they're using something different, so it's cheaper. If you could find the money, if you could find the $17,000 somewhere, or find a grant, or possibly with what may be coming out of Washington D.C. with this proposed next infrastructure food bar silly throw the money away thing, if you could find the money somewhere, it would be really beneficial to do it, because those roads are a real mess. You know, along about the middle of August, everybody's praying for snow just to get rid of the dust.
All right.
But we, on the other side, everybody understands that we live on a gravel road.
And again, the gravel road is not a long-term solution to the problem. I mean, truly those roads need to be paved. And the more money we put into affirming that the gravel is the way to go, you know, it's kind of like, well, will you ever get there, you know?
Yeah, but look, if you go into Kegel and you say, we're going to pave all these roads, you're looking at $200,000 a mile.
I understand.
Absolute bare minimum. Mm-hmm. Where's the money going to come from? We have applied for grant after grant after grant when Obama first came in and he had that stimulus, and we were turned down every single time for road improvements at Kegel. So okay. Right now, the best thing that can be done to those roads is to maintain a spring and a fall maintenance program to pull the gravel out of the ditches, and those ditches have got to be fixed. You and I are going to have to talk about that.
And let's talk about that while we're talking.
Until we can afford it.
Okay, because again, that's why we have this committee, is so that they can talk about these things. You know, when Tim McGinnis was here, he said he thought he had a little book on proper maintenance and care of gravel roads. Okay, so I followed up with it a couple times, and you could never find that. And, you know, I made him feel guilty about not being able to find it. So here, yesterday or the day before, he sent me over the link to a site that has all this information on gravel roads. So I was gonna print it out for this committee. You know, you had enough on your plate, I wasn't going to put another thing on your plate.
Have you guys thought about chip seal as opposed to paving as an interim measure before you pave and get 8-10 years out of that, or maybe longer?
Well, the problem is, where's the money going to come from? And I'll tell you right now, if the city tries to float a bond measure to pay for roads, it'll be defeated 80%.
Well, Don Greiner brought up about a bond measure last night, as you recall, and it wasn't well received. I mean, nobody ridiculed him because he was asking for ideas, but certainly nobody's going to be receptive to a bond measure. Now, one of the reasons that Scott and Associates is here today, and you know, he's going to be your public works director as far as I'm concerned, is he also oversees sewer and water. And I think once we have sewer and water over here, we're going to start looking at the Cagle neighborhood as a place that needs public sewer. And if in fact we go that route, then anything that we do those roads, we'd have to consider, I assume that the sewer lines would run down the middle of the roads, and that we wouldn't want to have any kind of a real developed strategy like a chip seal until such times as right. we had those sewers in the road system. But I'm looking at Scott, you know, first of all, Scott, is it reasonable to sewer the Cagle neighborhood at some point?
Absolutely, it needs to happen today, I think. I don't live there, but
and is there
if I did live there and had a failing sewer system and the county came and told me I had to build a $20,000 wastewater plant in my backyard, I know what I'd tell them.
Yeah, well, I had to build one too.
Yeah.
And yeah, that's about the dumbest thing I ever heard of.
It's just not fair.
No, it's
not fair to the people that voted to be in the city to not have
the thing
even
that,
those most basic services.
The thing that the people in Cagle don't understand, the residents of Cagle don't understand, is that in order to fix those roads, except for Cagle, Pine and Doe and Antler and whatever, they're only 20 feet wide. And they're only 10 feet in center line to side. In order to pave, you got to go 15, you got to go 30, then you've got to go 3 feet of shoulder, then you've got to go 3 feet of easeway, and all of a sudden my next door neighbor's fence is in the street.
Right.
And when the city starts that, I'm telling you, there's going to be, you know, people are going to go, what happened? And they've been told, but nobody pays attention until it happens.
Right.
And you're right about the trees, there's all those trees that got to come out. Everybody's going to lose those beautiful ponderosa pines they planted 20 years ago and those beautiful Colorado spruce trees. They're going to be, pardon the pun, they're going to be pissed.
Oh, yeah.
Yep, they are.
Oh, they are. Definitely.
And I, on my side, I've already taken out all the trees that I know are in the right of way. I've already taken them all out. I took them all out. Might as well do it now or later.
Well, in our road district, they started taking trees out for snowplow reasons and grader reasons. And they're in the right of way, and we've got people complaining that we're taking out their trees.
Well, yeah, they are. They are their trees because they consider their property to be from the edge of the road. And it's not.
I understand that. It's their trees to maintain, but it's actually the road district's trees to do what they want with them. They don't see out there when the road grader comes by or the snowplow comes by how it's breaking mirrors and windows and stuff like that, and they don't care.
That's not one. There you go.
Because I've been in that situation, I understand.
But those roads need to be fixed. But it's a long-term, slow process. You're going to have to do one thing at a time. You can't just go in there and tear the whole country up. And people are going to have to be informed. We had last summer, Rick Allen and I had a big meeting with all the residents of the Cagle subdivision concerning the roads. When the city went through and removed a whole bunch of trees. You know how many people, residents showed up? Me.
Oh, you're kidding.
And everybody got a letter in the mail. I'm the only one that showed up, and I showed up because I was on the committee to begin with.
The rest of them don't have any room to complain, man.
Amen.
Yeah, you don't realize, as the homeowner, you don't realize what it is and isn't yours until it starts changing on you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Start because you'd have to do that. I don't know how those roads would ever get paved though without making some sort of a local improvement district.
Yeah, I don't know.
I mean, it'd be
it's
a long lot of years at 100 feet a year or something with the amount of money that's available.
And it is expensive, and it's petroleum driven, so it even gets more expensive over time.
But before you do any road improvement other than maintenance, you need to look at what you're going to do with the infrastructure.
Utilities need to go first.
Exactly. Utilities, sewer, if you got water lines going in because of the water district, they've got to be put in places. All of that's got to be taken care of before you go in and attempt to do any road work, whether it's widening roads, whether it's chip seal or paving or whatever. So
you mentioned the fact that sewer water is going to go in there, and sewer water has to go in there because it's in the city charter. It has to. And that's part of the deal to become a city. You have to provide sewer water. But the sewer district did a survey 2 years ago, and a mail survey to every address in Cable and Tractor. Do you want sewer and water? 80% of the people said no, stay the hell off my property.
Did
and
they?
Yet they were told that when they voted for incorporation that that was part of the deal, that they would have to someday be hooked up to city sewer and water. And yet 80% of the people who responded said no, we don't want it. And they know we don't want it because why? Because it's going to cost money. And nobody could tell them how much it's going to. How much is it going to cost to hook up your sewer? Well, I don't know. Well, you can't. You can't do that. You can't just say, "Well, we'll send you a bill. Good luck." I mean, that don't work. People have to know what's going on and get their objections out of the way before you proceed.
Right.
And you got to give them either today's cost or next year's cost that you are whatever. Guessing what they're going to be to give them an idea. Now, if it happens 10 years down the road, it's a whole different ballgame.
That's true, but you're talking about going in and taking those trees out on the right-of-way, which needs to be done. But all the residents are going to have to be informed. No. They're going to have to know that they're going to cut those trees down and make a big mess. Are you going to leave the trees for me, for my wood stove, or are you going to haul them off and sell them? What's going to happen? That wasn't done last time. People woke up in the morning, their trees are gone. They're going, what the hell's going on here? You can't do that.
I talked to Orlo's doctor, and he said it was important that he get out and cut down some trees and things as part of his physical therapy. So
okay.
When he is not cutting snow, we need to have him
out
there.
He needs to be in public relations.
And then the question is, you're going to really have to take it up with him, whether he hauls off all your trees to the dump or...
Oh no, I got wood stove.
See, there was no option last time.
Yeah, see, there needs
Russell
to be.
Russell just hauled them all off.
No, see,
there was no. That's why I took mine down before he got there.
Do you guys have an HOA out there at all?
What's an HOA?
Homeowners Association.
No.
You've never had anything like
no,
that.
No, never.
You don't have a road.
So how do you communicate with the people in the Cable District then?
You talk to each other.
Is anybody passing the word that because you're in the city? And all this needs to be done, and what they're saying is, I don't want it done today, and tomorrow they're going to tell you the same thing, and it's going to be an ongoing situation. One of these days, that isn't going to happen,
mm-hmm.
whether they like it or not.
That's right. But people ignore a problem until it directly affects them.
Yes, you're right.
If you have a cold, I feel bad for you, but it don't bother me because I don't have one.
Mm-hmm.
It's the same thing with this deal.
Well, maybe what we need to do is, when we get through this big pile here, is start up some kind of a communication piece or newsletter or whatever.
There's no reason why in the Eagle newspaper, where you have the mayor's corner, there's no reason why a little blurb can't be put in there about, we're planning on doing this to you. And everybody in town reads that thing.
Yeah, they do.
So it is free,
mm-hmm.
and you can pick it up anywhere.
That's why they read it.
That's right. That's very true.
Free is good.
And all you need is a little paragraph in there.
Well, you need to start educating them now.
Yeah, long before
that's
we
what
get
I mean.
Started.
Exactly. And then you can start educating them as to what you're going to do, but then you need to also have a game plan as to what you're going to do, so that when somebody says, okay, what are you going to start with first? The city can say, this is what we plan on doing,
mm-hmm.
and this is why.
And that education program has got to carry over to things that don't pertain to this committee, like code enforcement. You drive through Cagle, and half of the code book is in violation. And that will have to be fixed. It has to be, because it's the city ordinance, it's the law. And people don't understand that, but we should put it out there so that they know it's going to happen, and they give them a chance to think about it.
Well, let's talk code enforcement for a moment while we're on the subject. You know, we have planning authorities that are going to be conferred upon us by the state sometime in the latter part of July. And right now, we have an IGA, an interlocal agreement with Deschutes County, to provide for planning services.
Right.
Okay, Tom Anderson, who's the community development director again, contacted me and said, you know, Steve, that agreement we have expires here at the end of this month. What do you want me to do with it? And I go, well, it's going to be at least a couple months, maybe three, before we have all the planning authorities in place and we can start code enforcement. I said, well, why don't we continue it? He said, no problem. He says, well, just continue it. And I says, by the way, I understand you don't provide for code enforcement in our city. And he goes, yeah. He says, we wanted to. He says, but, you know, in order to have code enforcement, if push comes to shove, we need to have law enforcement back us up. And we talked to Larry, the sheriff, and for whatever reason, he said he wouldn't do any code enforcement back up in Lapine. And I said, you're kidding. And the concern was not whether or not, as part of this IGA continuing of it, the county would do code enforcement for us. But if we start doing code enforcement, because that's one of our goals in our budget,
yes,
hire a part-time code enforcement officer and start doing the whole thing, then we'll probably get the same similar response from the sheriff. So I'm driving up to a meeting this morning at about 6:30 with the mayor. We were having a town hall meeting with the county commission. And so we're driving along, and I tell him about this conversation that I'd had with Tom Anderson and how Larry wouldn't enforce code enforcement. Well, I thought the mayor was going to go through the roof of his vehicle, first of all. But then we started talking about how important it was. And then I brought up about the broken window theory, and I don't know if you know about the broken window theory or not, but it is a very important aspect of code enforcement. So we go and we sit down at this town hall meeting, and who sits down next to us but Larry? And so we're thinking, oh, Okeechobee, we're going to set up a meeting to talk because that was our game plan, and there he is. And I said, you know, we were going to come talk to you, and we were going to talk to you about a concept called the broken window theory. And he goes, I was just talking about that yesterday. I just wrote a report on it. I've studied that. It's the greatest thing there is in the whole world. And I'm thinking, thank you, Lord, because that's how we were going to explain why code enforcement was important, was the broken window theory. And he understands it. So now we're going to go meet with him. Hopefully, as we start our code enforcement, we're going to have law and justice to back it up.
So we are going to start that in July?
Yes, we are.
And it will be a city code enforcer?
Either way, the county providing it for us, because they know that the sheriff will provide for it, or we provide for it. I don't care who provides for it, as long as it gets provided for, and we start right away. Yes, sir?
In 100 words or less, what is the broken window theory?
Okay. Let me go back to Rudy. You know who Rudy Giuliani is?
Yes.
He was the mayor of New York City, but before he was the mayor of New York City, he was the prosecutor. You know, he was the prosecutor for Manhattan. And he believed, this is an old theory, the broken window theory is an old theory. He had applied it to police enforcement, and he reduced crime in New York City the most that any major city had ever had crime reduced in its history. And in fact, it's in Guinness Book of Records for crime reduction. They asked him, what was his secret? He said, the broken window theory. It's a real simple theory. And that is, if there's a broken window in a house, in a neighborhood, and then somebody also throws their debris out on the yard, and nobody fixes the window, nobody picks up the trash, then that sends a message to the people that don't like to follow rules that this is a good place to be. Because two things, one, people don't care whether rules are followed or not, and B, apparently enforcement doesn't care either, or they'd be out seeing that it's taken care of. And so because you've got these two consents, then the perpetrators, the people that don't follow rules, start to move into these areas, and then they start to manifest crime slowly but certainly. And, you know, and the way most law enforcement agencies work is, after you've done about 10 bad things, we finally catch up with you, and then we spend a lot of time prosecuting you, because what you've done now that you've done it the 10th time is really bad. But if instead you go out when there's a broken window or there's a paper on the sidewalk or debris over here, and you tell them, damn it, you clean this up or else we're writing you a ticket, and you take care of it at the lowest denominator, mm-hmm. you also send a message to the neighborhood that the law enforcement cares, the neighborhood in turn cares, and it says to people that don't want to follow rules, you know, we don't want you here. Okay. So like, for instance, the Huntington neighborhood over here has some challenges. I want to apply the broken window theory over there. And that is, anybody does anything over there that's out of school, even if it seems innocuous, that we go after it. All right, sort of giving strength and purpose to the neighborhood, addressing it when it's a little thing, instead of addressing it law enforcement-wise when it's a big thing. And so I just recited this all back to the sheriff this morning, and he was lapping it all up. So I'm thinking that'll be our segue when we go to talk to him, is, look, we need to do code enforcement, you need to back us up, because we're employing the broken window theory.
You know, there's an issue there. Homes over there are foreclosed on, owned by banks. How do you enforce banks to do anything?
Now, there are ways. There are papers that you can file that require banks to assume to have certain responsibilities and demonstrate those responsibilities to cities. The other thing is you can do, and I've done before because I've been in land use a long time, is when I have a place, whether it's in the bank's possession or it's in a person's possession, and invariably they won't clean it up, they won't follow the rules, is I simply go over to the recorder's office and I record with the recorder's office a violation that says there is a zoning issue associated with this land. And you say, well, what does that make a difference? Because then that shows up on the title search. And when somebody goes to buy a piece of property and they see on there that there's a zoning violation, they don't want to buy it. So I found that when I file these papers with the recorder's office and also send a copy to them and they figure out what I've done, then all of a sudden they're real interested in curing it because they, A, can't get financing for their house because it's encumbered because it has this black mark on it. And B, they can't sell it because it's got a black mark on it. And so don't put it beyond me. Go put black marks on some of these properties over there if they don't want to play ball. Okay?
Try that around.
It's simple, but it works.
Yeah, I've called the realtor and he could care less.
Well, all of a sudden when he sees on the title report that he's going to have to explain to a prospective buyer why this thing has black mark, black
code enforcement violation
on it. Mm-hmm. You know, and he can't do that, you know, and he just lost a sale, he's going to be motivated.
Okay. This will be a new thing probably happening here that, you know, everybody's going to have to be educated on.
Again, this is a brand new, that's why I like it here. We get to make it up every single day. Okay? We don't have an answer, we just make it up. And sometimes those answers are even correct.
Yeah, the OTA?
On the
top. Out of the error theory?
Yeah. That's you got yet another theory going here.
If this in fact gets going after July 1st, Ted Scholler in our office is the multiple listing, mm-hmm. the Central Oregon Multiple Listing Office, Association of Realtors representative. So all we have to do is broadcast that through the whole multiple listing system that this will be happening in the city limits of Lapine.
And all of a sudden, yet another impetus to do what's right. And again, I don't really think it's going to take a whole lot. The broken window theory is really just, you know, we see it today. It's a slight thing. And the thing is, I think the city's a little frustrated because they hear the sheriff goes over there, sheriff deputies, and they don't do anything. But, you know, I managed a lot of sheriff deputies over the years. And the reason they're sheriff deputies is they want to get the bad guy. It's sexy. That's why they do it. And when you call them up and you say, you know, my neighbor has hung some clothing on their fence, and that's a zoning violation, and I'm a police officer, and I want to shoot somebody, and all of a sudden, I've got to deal with laundry. I'm not going to get real excited about it, and I'm going to blow it off. I'm going to come to your house. I'm going to be not respectful, nod my head yes, and go, there's nothing I can do about it, because there's not a bad guy here for me to shoot.
Or they're going to say, go to the city. It's a civil matter.
Yeah.
Or they come to the city, and the city doesn't have a code enforcement.
Well, this is going to be a good thing for everybody and for our city, because there's not a street that isn't affected. Well, maybe not Crescent Creek, but the whole rest of the city is the way. And they've got stringent CCNRs.
I'm glad you're not making me the crook.
And I was just going to say, and I was talking to Orlo's position.
You can wear that white hat.
Yeah.
There you go.
Can I talk a little?
I'm going to have bills going all the way around.
Yeah. All right. Let's hear what he has to say.
So when before I came to work, 8.5 years for the city of Bay City over on the coast, and they had a lot of stuff that was coming up like this as well, and the code enforcement officer was as simple as one of the sheriff deputies. The city bought a badge. One of the sheriff deputies went and deputized the public works director and gave him an extra ticket book, and now you're a code enforcement officer. And so you go out and you write a ticket against one of your city violations about whatever fine your resolution says you're going to charge them for. And it goes to court in Tillamook and or here to Bend, and you don't ever get any of that money, and they pay the fine, but nothing happens. And it seemed like kind of a rough way to go, and so rather than writing very many tickets, what we did there was just a whole lot of nuisance abatement. You have a bunch of trash in your yard. The city sends you a letter. You got 30 or 60 or 90 days to take care of this trash. Or mow your blackberries, which was a big thing there. Build a fence so your neighbor doesn't have to see your trash. Mm-hmm. And in 30 or 60 or 90 days, it didn't happen. You go post out in their yard. You've got 10 days to do it now, or we're going to do it for you.
And you lien the property?
Then you lien the property. You go clean it up, whatever your costs are for your time and disposal, and you get here to be wilderness to set a drop box there, and you clean it up and you put it on the property. You get your money that way when it ever sells or something happens to it. Things like on-street parking, I suppose, are easier to hand out a ticket for. Things like a car farm in the backyard, what's the ticket gonna do?
Well, leaning a property when you're gonna go against a bank would make a big impact, because they're going to have to give clear title, and that's going to come out of their pocket.
Yeah, you need a code enforcement officer needs to be. I don't know that it needs to be another. Arlo, I guess, has already done it, but so he'll buy him a badge. Well, you'll buy him a badge. I don't
has anybody seen the S&R storage on Reed Road? I'm not
yes,
but it's on.
William Foss.
William Foss. Mm-hmm. S&R storage across the street from it.
That's
the worst place in Lapine. He's got cars, he's got crap 20 feet high. If he throws something out that goes in the middle of the pile, I've never seen it as an eyesore like that.
Probably the worst site in the city limits, but I've got a site out by me.
And talk about a fire hazard.
Oh, yeah.
Why the fire department hadn't gone by there and said something? Have you ever seen it? Cross me without the S&R storage?
Yeah, I want you to know, as your city manager, when I'm driving to work, I have blinders on, I see nothing. I'm like Sergeant Schultz, I see nothing. Because everywhere I look, I see things, and if I were to think very hard about all the things I see, I'd go crazier than I am already.
This is worse than anything you've seen in town.
I know everybody can come and have a cup of coffee or hot chocolate or water or whatever at our office, and we'll just walk on down the road.
When I tell people when they're coming over to the house, I make sure they go down Findlay Butte. Don't go by that, because you get as soon as you see it,
it's scary. You
that pretty
easy. No, Findlay Butte
is a mess too.
And I guess what else I was getting at is would the city then have their own, what would it be, a municipal court? where you cite them into court, does it come before the city council? Is somebody going to preside over that?
Justice of the peace, right here.
Yeah. Well, you're going to be the justice of the peace.
Well, you know, the doctor said that.
I mean, these are the parts that, to me, come up on the code enforcement.
Again, this is just early in the game.
I know, but I'm glad that we put them out on the table, because these are real big issues for having people move into these neighborhoods. You know, Huntington Meadows was planned very nicely, and those houses have the potential to be very, very nice, and many, many, many of them are.
The majority of them are.
Yes.
Yeah, and we just want to address the bad apples. That's really, we don't want to be Big Brother, but we want to protect their investment.
Well, and the citizens and residents of Lapine are really adamant about this code enforcement officer, so they're all...
We're about 60 days out right
okay.
now, that's right.
Tell us about the 2013 special city allotment program for $50,000.
Right.
We want it.
Okay, this fell into our lap last week, and I thought, again, seven minds is better than one. This is money that is available to jurisdictions. The purpose of the program is to assist cities in repairing or reconstructing city streets or sidewalks which are inadequate for the capacity they serve or are in a condition detrimental to safety. And it's a $50,000 grant. We have to apply for it by August 1st. There's some provisos. The street must be under ownership, jurisdiction, and control of the city. State or county maintained roads within the city limits are not eligible. When selecting a project, choose a street that is in very poor condition and carrying a high volume of traffic, such as, and it gives some examples. And it says applications may also be submitted for bicycle and pedestrian projects. And then it says down here, a good method of selection is to have several people drive over and examine the city streets and pick a street which has best compliance with the guidelines and satisfies the law. We recommend you compare several streets before making the final selection. Okay, well, you know, we don't have very many city streets, and that's why I brought this out too. I'm asking you folks to put your thinking cap on. I gave this to council last night. I said, help me find a street or a sidewalk or a curb or something that's on a city street that meets the criteria, and then we will go out and try and pursue an application. All right? And so this, the map tells you where the city streets are, and of course we don't have very many. We have just a couple miles. But I'd ask you folks to think about where we might be able to make for some improvement so that I can go shake the money tree for another $50,000. Because we don't have a lot of money in our piggy bank, and the only way we're going to succeed is by going out big borrowing or stealing whatever we can get. And every time a grant application comes in, I'm going to ask people to help me figure out what's competitive and then go for it. So I'd ask you folks to look it over, drive around, think about it, and see if we can't come up with something.
Well, what's
the color?
You mean it has to be paved already for this to...
It has to be... As I understand it, and I'd have you read the application itself, but as I view it, it has to be some paved street that's diminished, preferably one that has some traffic volume, and or a sidewalk that's diminished. You know, one that comes
to mind. But it has to be the orange ones, right?
But it has to be, it has to be a red or an orange one, because that's all that's city.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because you know, immediately the first thing I thought of before I read the criteria is right there on Huntington, right where the U.S. Bank is, that sidewalk was just about to gone.
Yeah,
away.
Shot. That's bad.
You know.
How about my neighborhood, Carter Court? The whole thing's falling apart.
Okay, well.
Off of Preble.
Okay, well, again.
It's not well traveled, though.
Well, it can be. If we hook it up with Huntington Meadows.
We'll lie. We'll tell them that they get 3,000 transportation trips a day.
And I'm counting on all of you. Arlo, bring the bus by there.
So
I'm out of commission, so probably September.
Counter on it. Just go back and forth all day.
Yeah. Somebody just with a tamper. Right, right. Just sit there.
Yeah.
And Arlo's position said he should get out and drive a lot, too, as part of his therapy. You're going to be a busy man, guy.
Yeah. I'm glad you got somebody to pick on.
Thank you. So anyway, folks, this is what we have. Help me get this $50,000. You just find the street, and I'll write the application.
Why wouldn't Cagle? Just Cagle Road qualify for that?
It's not paved.
It's not paved.
Oh. Well, it's gotta be a paved road.
Everything up there is
solid orange. Anything with dashes is unpaved.
When do you need recommendations back in order to meet this August 1st deadline?
Well, figure that I'm going to need a couple of weeks to write it up. So I'd like to start writing it July 15th.
So you got to give us a week to have something back to you.
Well, today is what? It's
June 14th.
Thursday.
Yeah, so you've got, let's say a couple of weeks.
Okay.
2-3 weeks.
Say right after the 4th of July.
Yeah, right after, by the 4th of July. Something okay. Like that, if you could.
You want it by email or dropped here?
Just anyway, just let me know.
If we call you at home?
If you call me at home.
11:30 or something.
It don't matter. I'm up, I'm doing something. I don't sleep anymore. I have a non-sleeping job.
Has anything come from that deal with Deschutes County on getting the pavement condition?
Oh, the road grader?
No, the survey of road conditions.
Yes, I believe that is, I talked to Rick.
No, I don't know that we have a copy of it yet.
But
they did. I mean, they did their, I don't know if they're in the compiling, because they did the whole county. I need to email him just to get enough.
Well, that might be helpful to this application. And that, you know, not only do we meet your criteria, but we've gone out and evaluated the integrity of the road, and some monies now will maintain its character, but if we let it go, it will go to hell.
Okay.
All right.
What about an update on the WikiUp project?
That is what we were going to.
We were going to, you know, and I.
We couldn't think.
Yeah.
Patty, sometimes, and I'll tell you, like, make note of that. You need to, because you're the secretary there, kind of. Is it make like for the next meeting? That came up last time. So next meeting, we want to have the ODOT person do a presentation on WikiUp.
On the overpass.
The whole thing, because Steve and I were racking our brains.
What did you guys do? And they were all coming here and no one showed up today.
It's different people.
Oh.
I mean, there's a project manager for WikiUp.
Oh, good. Can we get him here?
That's what, yeah. So okay. Put that in the minutes, Patty. Thank you.
And the last thing, because we've only got 1 minute left,
okay,
before we all turn into pumpkins, is Tom Weller, who is here. He just doesn't look like he's here, but he wanted me to assure Linda that he was here so that Linda wouldn't put a contract on us.
Okay.
So he is sitting next to you, even though
okay.
I didn't see him. He, you know, one of the things that's on the list is illumination. We talked about providing for 8 illuminaries. You know, traditionally they've gone on Huntington, okay? They've gone on Huntington, I think, to help qualify downtown.
And the businesses paid for those, plus Mid-State.
Mid-State is contributing.
No, those were paid for by
the Ford Foundation.
Ford Foundation, that's right.
And they also paid for 10 years of electrical cost to the city, which will actually, we figured it out, it's only 7.5. And then after that time, the city will have to pay the light bill.
Oh, okay.
But that was all done but it cost us a ton of money in attorney fees, but
anyway,
what
Tom has provided you is just an understanding of where the luminaries are now, the
okay.
ones that are little pink Easter eggs,
uh-huh.
That's where they are now. The blue ones, or excuse me, the green ones are county.
Okay.
Or or state install luminaries. Now, my thinking is this. The council has agreed to provide for 8 luminaries around town. Seems to me they ought to go where they will provide the greatest benefit. And to me, that would be intersections and possibly intersections that have high levels of accidents or the prospects of high levels of accident. That's just my view. You may have a different view. But I would ask you folks, just as I'm asking you to look around town and see where there may be a road or a sidewalk that's in disrepair that might be eligible for this grant monies, I would ask you to look around town and see where, if you could put a luminary that would make a difference, where you'd want to put it, okay? Because what I'd want to do is I'd want to be able to take from this committee to the council and say, you know, our public works committee has looked at luminaries, looked at the fact that you have 8 available, and here's their druthers, all right? So it's like a homework assignment, okay? Now I'm going to be all suspicious if they all end up over in Orlo's backyard and his front yard and his side yard. We'll deal with that when we deal with it, okay? Anyway, that's my report today. I'm going to, whatever I said, I'm going to stick with it.
Well, thank you.
Well, thank you.
For all of the guidance and information. We appreciate
that. Well, I want you to really, I mean, I'm sitting here and all this stuff comes flying across my desk all day long. And once Scott's over here, it'll fly across his desk. But I want it to fly across your desk, too. Truly, if there's no reason for you to exist, if we don't work you to death, and have you make great plans for this community. All right.
Did you want to talk about this meeting prior to the council?
Oh, that was another thing that came up. Like, for instance, let's say that you had some things that were really, you were chomping at the bit to go, and you instructed me or recommended or whatever. By God, we need to do this. Okay, well, think about it. The council met last night, so all of a sudden you want this done. So, you know, 2 weeks or a month from now, I get it to the council and they look at it. The thought was that, you know, maybe you guys meet on a Tuesday if you could, because they meet on a Wednesday. And then I could say, you know, I met with them last night and they had the torches out and, you know, they're not taking no for an answer and they want this done. Okay, and then just facilitates outcomes. So I don't know if you want to continue meeting on Thursdays, but if you want to contemplate a meeting on Tuesday or maybe 1 month or something before council, I'm just thinking you get a better, it's nice if you can quickly pass the ball to them. You know, by God, we looked at this, we think this is an issue, we think you need to take an action on it.
Could we put that on next month's agenda that we will take a consensus from everybody, because we're missing 2 people.
Tuesday morning, so the Thursday morning,
mm-hmm.
And fine with me.
Is that the first Tuesday of the month or second Tuesday?
No, I think we're the second.
Patty, when did the council meet? They meet twice a month. And
they meet the second Wednesday and the fourth Wednesday of every month.
Okay.
And the third Tuesday is, that wouldn't matter anyway, because
That's water.
But we can meet the second Tuesday.
Yeah, the second Tuesday would be open.
And that's when they meet and take actions, the council,
yeah,
on the Wednesday.
Yeah, the first meeting of the month is when they take action.
No, so we have to meet.
But if we
Tuesday
meet on
before,
a Tuesday,
yeah.
Is that
we'll just
give
change it from Thursday
to get stuff
this week
to council
Tuesday, right?
No,
to
first Tuesday.
Take action on in 24 hours.
I thought she said second.
Well,
she
the
said
thing is that maybe they can't Wednesday. Take action on because here's the problem.
Or they think
no, it's a
they can be
Wednesday.
Thinking about it
okay.
That
okay.
Next
okay.
Night.
Gotcha.
And when they meet 2 weeks later, they can take an action on it.
Oh, okay.
Otherwise, you know, you guys,
right.
Let's say today, Doug said,
yeah.
I want this done by God. I want the council to know about it.
So,
now, okay, well, they met last night, so they won't meet for 2 weeks. So 2 weeks from now, I go in and I say, oh, by the way, they want this done. Okay, thank you for bringing that up. Maybe we'll take an action on our next meeting. So then it's a good month away. And let's say it had to do with mosquitoes that are over 20 pounds in weight. okay, and carrying away children, and you don't have a month to wait, then what do you do?
So why don't you send an email to the rest of the committee and us, including us, and how do you feel about it?
And put it on the...
Answer yes or no?
Well, maybe we should have it on next month's agenda. Do we all agree to change it?
Bear in mind that if they're not here, they're gonna, whoever's not here is gonna have to abide by our decision.
Yeah, right, this is voted now.
Well, yeah, naturally after.
This is voted now.
And Tom agreed that if he wasn't here the next meeting, he would buy breakfast.
Okay.
He doesn't know he agreed to this. But he's not here, so it really doesn't matter.
All right, we vote for it.
So we have made a change for the meeting, that it will be the second Tuesday.
Do you want to do that?
Well, I think everybody has to go and check their calendar.
Okay.
But I think that, well, and it's kind of fine with me, but I'd like to have Roy's input and Tom's too, since he is the chairperson.
I think an email would be appropriate at the very least, unless we put on our agenda for next meeting.
Get a consensus who...
Yeah, I need to meet with Orlo after this meeting. He's gonna have to get a number of licenses to be in all these businesses that he's establishing.
Ed, do you have any other comments, anything, opinions, issues?
Well, I can't give you a very good number for you.
No, I don't.
Bill?
Yes, I would like our committee to know that I am adamantly against the BMX track, especially being funded by the city up to $10,000. That's a park and recreation project, not a city project, taxpayers' monies. It also should go before, maybe park and rec, go before the Lions Club and say, how would you like to have this as a program to sponsor? I know the Kiwanis Club of Bend put in Ponderosa Park. They put in so many parks themselves, helping the park district, including the skate park at Ponderosa Park, the Kiwanis Club, Service Club. Mm-hmm. It's not a taxpayer's money to put in, and you know, for the 15 kids that can use it 3 months of the year. Thank you.
Okay, and let me just provide that.
Plus, they're giving a city light, one of our lights to them, to light the project up for 3 months. Forget about it. It's a service club project.
Let me tell you, one of our goals on our priority list,
we saw that,
was trying to establish a dialogue with the youth. Okay. And so as part of that, I've been over talking to the leadership class at the high school, which is comprised of freshmen, sophomore, junior, seniors. There's 35 of them. Asking them, you know, look, we're old people. We, you know, traditionally, old people, they run cities, they make decisions for everybody, but, you know, we feel that it's important to hear your voice, so what is your voice? And the voice back is, we'd like to have a BMX track. Now, whether the Lions Club does it or whoever does it, if it could be done without taxpayer monies, that's fine, but the kids that are over there, that we've asked them for their input and want to establish that bond with them, have said they want a BMX track.
That was those kids out in front of Bi-Mart in their lunch hour. I saw you talking to them. No, I mean, that's how I feel about it.
No, I understand.
I know what, you know, I know what goes on at those places. Yes. You get a few good ones.
Now, you've got to know that
to say that the whole school body wants the BMX thing, maybe a few of them.
You're welcome to come with me when these meetings. But I want to say this, at the last place there was, which was CUNA, and nobody can say here for whatever reason, I don't know, we put in two BMX tracks, okay?
The city?
Yes. And we had nothing but success with them, and law enforcement liked it because they knew where all the kids were, and they could keep an eye on them in one spot rather than them having run all over the place, and that was helpful for them. And it gave the kids an outlet, you know, that they could go do something instead of doing it to your house in the middle of the night. So, again, just trying to accommodate all the constituencies.
I understand what you're trying to do. Okay. No, I do understand that. But like I said, they might be over there in the daytime, but at night they're at my place.
Parks and Rec doesn't have money to set up a BMX setup right now unless they were to apply for a grant.
Well, that's why I said that.
And you're right, we are the appropriate people. But I also think if there is a, even if it's a loosely knit BMX club here and it's not a sanctioned club, they need to get together and either, I agree that the Parks and Rec would be the entity to come to and talk to them. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm hearing a lot of things, but I'm seeing things happen in the community here on BLM land, right out there by going into Newberry Estates. There's a quad area, what I think is a quad area. I see snowmobiles there, and they tell me that BMX bikes aren't allowed there. I said, who's setting the rules here?
Well, that's a county park. They put that in about 5 years ago, strictly for ATVs and dune buggies and snowmobiles.
I ran out there 25 years ago.
Yeah. That's what they put it in for. They never intended that to be for bicycles. They were afraid to have motorized vehicles and bicycles at the same time. And it's not used very much at all. Most people don't even know where it is.
If you go driving over there.
Yeah.
Well, if you drive into Newberry Estates after you go past Gordy's and the Moose Lodge, you drive right by it.
Yeah. But how many people drive into Newberry Estates? Only the people who live there.
Yeah, I've seen that.
The rest of the area doesn't go over there.
Doug, do you have any more
comments? Oh, I'll make it different with you. I go over there once in a while, and I live northwest of you.
I know. two things. I think it would be extremely more efficient for us and the city council if we changed our meeting days to Tuesday, because of the time lag.
Right.
And I also think that the city council, and this body, and the planning commission need to concentrate on doing the things that were promised to the residents here who voted for a corporation. We need to be a little bit more focused on what the voters had to say when they said, yes, we want to be a city, we want the message cleaned up, we want First and Reed with a stoplight, we want all these things done, we want the drainage problems fixed downtown in the wintertime, we want the gravel roads taken care of. The city needs to concentrate on those things first. And then the other stuff that goes along with, like, the Chamber of Commerce and all this other stuff, that's a secondary thing.
And I'm trying to push that direction. The Chamber is so influential. And I just see it, the 4 months I've been here, it's kind of like, well, the city is, city, you got to do what we ask you to do. Well, not that against the chamber, they're a good bunch of people, but they're not all the constituency here.
Well, see, before we became a city, the Lapine area here was run by the Chamber of Commerce. They dictated everything that was going to happen. They were the lead, and they were the lead in incorporation. And now, all of a sudden, the city council is the lead. They don't want to give up their... You don't want to give up your authority.
Yeah. Well, and that's why I'm looking to you folks to kind of
help. Well, can we have a list? I'd like to have a list of what were the priorities before incorporation that the people, when they voted for incorporation, were looking forward to being implemented.
Well, Steve has that list. There are 10 things that were listed on the ballot that had to be satisfied for this place to become a city. And they're on file somewhere, and that went to the state of Oregon, and the state of Oregon approved them. Those things have to be done first.
Well, let me ask the keeper of wisdom. Patty, are you aware of any such list?
I'm sorry, what was
Are you aware of any such list, a list of the 10 items that had to be satisfied as part of the ballot measure for the city incorporated?
No, I'm not really, but Rick is. Rick, okay. I think, has dealt with that.
Yeah.
There's some stuff on the city's website about you guys' initials goals were when you formed the city, that initial city council and all
I
that.
I think we all need to read that.
There's some stuff on the website.
We should have a copy of it.
There's one thing there you're forgetting. The city needs money to do a lot of these things, and if they don't have the money, they can't get done. And if the taxpayers don't want to pay for it, it's not going to happen.
And that's true. Agree with that, but I still think that we should know residents expect and just be aware of.
You'll be informed.
Absolutely.
The city budget is no different than anybody else's budget. My budget or a corporation budget. You get so much money every year. Mm-hmm. and you have so much money to spend. You have this much money coming in, and you can spend that much. And you never want to spend a dollar more than you get, like some cities up north of this have been doing and got themselves in big financial messes. You want to stay solvent, which we have been. Every year we've had money left over, so that we're not going into debt. But you have to prioritize what you're going to get done.
Right.
And those things that have to be done first are what were promised to the residents who voted to make this place a city. And all this other stuff has to come last, after you satisfy. They came to me and they said, vote yes. Why? Here's why. Okay? We voted yes. Those things have to be satisfied first.
And I think we should be prepared for this and prepared for, we realize that. We all know that. We're going towards that. But this is, we had to use money for this. Not excuses, but that we're just knowledgeable
just
and we're prepared.
Yeah, because you have to add that to the equation. Mm-hmm. You got to know what is foremost and fundamental to people.
See, the big thing that my neighbors tell me, they tell me this all the time. Hey, we're a city now. What did I get? I got an increased tax bill and nothing changed.
My neighbor said that to me yesterday. He said nothing, all I got was an increase in
my
electric rates.
And yet we have this great big beautiful city hall down here that we're paying for. But nothing in my life has changed.
I'm not selling their electricity.
Because we're a city except my tax bill. And I hear that all the time.
Well, and again, that's why it's important, I think, especially when we're young as a city, that we go out and we do some demonstrated public improvement projects.
Yes.
They got to know that we're focusing in and taking care of things within our piggy bank.
Okay. Arlo, any comments, concerns, questions?
I injured myself.
I know, how did you do that? You got stitches and everything.
I ruptured a bicep muscle loading luggage in a bus. I had surgery last Friday. They took the cast off this morning and put this brace on. I'm out of commission for 60 to 90 days. And
he needs a job.
Well, now
I'm on workers' comp.
I want you to know I heard a different story, and that was that he was on a mountain bike at a BMX track.
Out off of Roslyn. We know all about
he's
that.
He's now filed a lawsuit against the city.
I concur pretty much with what goes on and what's going on. And I apologize for being late, but I blame that on the cast room at the center today.
Okay. So. Well, then, with everybody's approval, I'd like to make a motion that we adjourn.
I would so move.
I'll second it.
All right. We are adjourned.
Well, thank you for your indulgence.
Thank you.
All right.
Bill, do you have time to stop by and see Gary?